You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Good afternoon. One of the themes which is never absent from the Weekly Post is this business of chaps who write one terrific song and then spend the rest of their lives avoiding people who keep asking them why they never wrote any more. Recently, we had the case of the English writer Aud Hamilton, who turned up with Your Blase, and who, although he wrote dozens of other songs for all sorts of occasions, never managed one quite in the class of Your Blase. The most famous case of all is possibly that of David Raxin, who claims Laura and nothing else of any real consequence. But maybe that's not his fault. He only wrote the tune in the belief he was providing background music to a thriller. Imagine his delight when he suddenly found himself the composer of a best-selling song with words by Johnny Mercer.
Laura is the face in the misty light. Footsteps that you hear down the hall. Floats on a summer night that you can never quite recall, and you see Laura on the train that is passing. They see she gave your very first kiss to you. That was Laura, but she's only a dream.
Laura, David Raxin, who claims nothing else of any real consequence. I can also think offhand of a man called Bart Howard, who not only wrote only one big song, but actually saw it die a quiet death and then years later get republished under a different name. It was originally launched as In Other Words, and only came up years afterwards as Fly Me to the Moon.
Fly me to the moon. Let me swing among those stars. Let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. heart with song. Let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you. Because you are all I long for, all I worship and I adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Howard wrote hundreds of other songs, but nothing remotely as memorable as Fly Me to the Moon. What's the explanation? There isn't one. All the composers I mentioned would like nothing better than to keep on writing hits. It wasn't for lack of trying that they failed. The truth is that a great songwriter is not somebody who writes a great song. It's somebody who goes on writing them. Dozens, even hundreds. Pause for a moment at the name Lionel Randolph Clauser, known professionally as Lionel Rand. His total output was just five songs, including one item with the unpromising title of Jojo the Hobo. He also wrote a song called Star and Garter with lyrics by... Well, lyrics by who? Which performer was a star preoccupied with garters? Quite right, Gypsy Rose Lee. But one of those five songs was this next one, which was published, then faded away, and then suddenly, 19 years later...
Let there be you... Let there be me, let there be oysters under the sea, let there be wind and occasional rain, chili con carne, sparkling champagne, let there be birds to sing in the trees, someone to bless me whenever I sneeze. Let there be cuckoos, a clock and a dove, but first of all, please, let there be love. Let there be you, let there be me, oysters under the sea, let there be wind and occasional rain, chili con carne, sparkling champagne, let there be birds to sing in the trees, someone to bless me whenever I sneeze. Let there be cuckoos, a lark and a dove, but first of all, please, let there be love. Let there be love. Let there be love. Let there be love.
The one and only hit of Lionel Rand. Incidentally, the words by the English writer Ian Grant were suggested, Grant tells me, by the opening of the book of Genesis, Let There Be Light. Now, when I was very young and willing to believe practically anything, I very nearly believed that a certain great song had been written by a swan. At least that's what it said on the record catalogues I picked up, where it used to have the name of the composer after the song, and it said, "When Your Lover Has Gone, a Swan." I later found out that one Aaron Swan, one-time saxophonist in the Vincent Lopez Orchestra, had written about half a dozen songs before dying at the early age of 36. Oddly enough, one of his songs was called A Room with a View, but not the Room with a View, which wasn't written by a swan but by a coward. Anyway, a swan had one moment of true glory when he wrote an outstanding ballad in 1931. Notice that he lived on for another 9 years without producing anything remotely in the class of this.
When you're alone, who cares for starlit skies? When you're alone, the magic moonlight dies. At break of dawn, there is no sunrise. When your lover has gone, what lonely hours the evening shadows bring. What lonely hours with memories lingering, like faded flowers.
When Your Lover Has Gone, sung there by Ella Fitzgerald, support from Nelson Riddle, words and music by A Swan. Now, the reason why artists like Ella often come up with these gems is that they have help from people who can tell a good song from a piece of rubbish. If you were to take Ella's songbooks, for instance, and add up the number of obscure, neglected items, occasionally even unrecorded, unpublished items, that received a new lease of life, I think the total would be impressive. A lot of the credit for that belongs to Norman Granz, whose idea the songbook series was, and whose knowledge of the work of the great songwriters is informed by personal acquaintance with the men, as well as with the work. Ella, too, had something to do with all this, because if you start singing with a name band at the age of 15, and are still singing at the top of your form 50 years later, then you're bound to accumulate a repertoire so vast that it has to include the occasional odd item. The regular listeners will know that this next one is one of my favourites, but as I've resisted playing it for a year, I'm about to indulge myself all over again. The case of Schwant and André, I would say, defies explanation. There's no logical reason for it. It just happened. Take Wilbur Clyde Schwant, an American who once studied with the greatest songwriter in the history of Brighton, Ray Noble. Schwant, an arranger and writer, specialised in Latin American music and published two books, which never quite challenged War and Peace or Great Expectations, but were presumably of some practical use to somebody. The titles were How to Play the Cha-Cha on the Hammond Organ and How to Play the Tango on the Spinet. Now, I have strong views on these issues, and I believe, for instance, that nobody should even attempt to play a tango on the spinet. However, Mr. Schwant then compounded his felony, so to speak, by composing something that sounds really terrifying, the Dixieland Cha-Cha, on which depressing note we will leave him and turn to his partner, Fabian André. He was a student of the famous Joseph Schillinger, and he too published a book. It was called The Rhythms of Latin America. He never quite sank to the depths of the Dixieland Cha-Cha, but he did write something called The Man Who Came to Rumba, and another one called The Maid with the Slight Swiss Accent. Well, you can see where we're going. Two men, specialists in Latin American rhythms, neither of them prolific, between them wrote only a handful of songs, none of which seem likely to interest us. And yet, in 1931, up comes this improbable pair, these tango spinettists and rumba experts, with this. I think it's a marvellous song, full of the kind of harmonic feeling that only the best writers can call on. How did they do it?
Stars shining bright above you, night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree, dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me.
Stars fading, but I linger on, dear.
Oh, how you linger on.
Still craving your kiss.
How you crave my kiss.
Now I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just sing this.
Give me a little kiss, sweet dreams, till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
Buzz, 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 buzz,
buzz.
Fading, but I linger on, dear. Still craving your kiss. Yeah, I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just saying this. Sweet dreams, dreaming.
Till something's fine, you keep dreaming.
Gotta keep dreaming.
Leave the worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, you've gotta make me a promise. Promise to me.
Dream a Little Dream of Me, and the words were by Gus Kahn. Now, before I come to my main excuse for reviewing the one-hit songwriters, let me delve into the pot just once more. I've played this one to show how a familiar song can sometimes turn out to have unfamiliar lyrics, and also to present in the person of the one-time teenage jazz pianist Joe Bushkin, a songwriter of remarkable promise who never turned out anything again in the class of this.
I'm not the girl cared about money. I'm not the girl who cared about fortunes and such. Never cared much. Oh, look at me now. I never knew a rhinestone from rubies. I never knew a mink from a sable or seal. Ponies from Reed. Oh, look at me now. Got a new man,
What a man. He's no handsome Merrill Flynn. I like his face and his bank is Chase. Half a million dollars ain't ten. So I'm the girl long for a cottage. So I'm the girl who's got an estate with a gate. I'm doing great. Oh, look at me now. I've got more than I deserve. I sleep till two, then what do? Pour the wine and serve the hors d'oeuvre. Oh, I'm the gal who's married to Wall Street. Yes, I'm the gal who's worth about 500 G's, at which don't sneeze. Oh, look at me now.
Lee Wiley singing with composer Joe Bushkin at the piano, Bobby Hagin on trumpet, Oh Look At Me Now. The figure of Raymond Hubble has been hovering over these proceedings since I began, and now it's time to spare a thought for him. Hubble was a prolific songwriter, 28 Broadway shows between 1903 and 1928. He was born in Ohio June the 1st, 1879, and was the second in command in the great campaign of Victor Herbert to get performance royalties for songwriters. Six of Hubble's hit shows were produced at the New York Hippodrome, the most lavish theatre of its day, complete with revolving stage, swimming pools on stage, a curtain that went down when you expected it to go up and up when you expected it to go down, and all kinds of technical innovations. Today, it's a parking lot, like Hubble's reputation, except for one song, and he only wrote that one by accident. In 1916, he composed for the Hippodrome a show called The Big Show, with Anna Pavlova as the star. Now, this time, the great Japanese opera star, Tamako Miura, famous for her role in Madame Butterfly, was in New York. And Hubble and his lyricist, John Golden, decided to write a song which would save people the trouble of going to see the opera, especially as Tamako Miura would be singing it in their show. So they wrote this song, and then at the first rehearsal, up came the Japanese maiden and started to sing it. Well, after about a minute, Raymond Hubble and John Golden began to have nosebleeds. And on investigation, it was found that they had the wrong Japanese singer. This wasn't Tamako Miura at all, but Haru Onuki. So when the show opened, one of the items in the program read, Butterfly by Haru Onuki and the Elm City Four. Well, after a little while, Miss Onuki went on her way to be replaced by a better singer called Sophie Bernard, who was not Japanese. As for Hubble, he retired young in order to improve his golf handicap. I think he eventually improved it from 7 to about 45. But he'd be completely forgotten today were it not for this one magnificent melody he wrote by accident for the wrong singer in 1916.
Poor butterfly, neath the blossoms waiting. Poor butterfly, she loved him so. The moments pass into hours, the hours pass into years, and as she smiles through her tears, she murmurs low. The moon and I know that he be faithful. I'm sure he'll come to me by and by. But if he don't come back, then I never sigh or cry. I just must die. Poor butterfly. Poor butterfly. Need the blossom. For she loved him so. The moments pass into hours. The hours pass into years. And as she smiles through her tears, she murmurs low. The moon and I, you'll come to me by and by. But if he don't come back, then I never, never sigh or cry. I just must die. I'm a butterfly. Poor butterfly. Neath the blossoms waiting. Poor butterfly. Oh, she loved him so. The moments pass into hours, and the hours pass into years. And as she smiles through her tears, murmurs low. The moon and I know that he'd be faithful. I'm sure he'll come. He'll be here by and by. But if he don't come back, then I'll sigh or cry. I just must die.
The one song for which the composer Raymond Hubbell is still remembered. It so happens that one of Hubbell's earliest librettist lyricists, a man called Robert Bark Smith, was born on June the 4th, 110 years ago. Although I think Robert Bark is only interesting because he was the brother of Harry Bark Smith. And Harry Bark Smith holds the all-time world record for writing musicals. Something like 130 that appeared on Broadway. Harry was a journalist turned lyricist, a great friend of Flo Ziegfeld. Such a friend, in fact, that he gave Flo the most original wedding present in the entire history of show business, a writ for non-payment of royalties. Harry Bark Smith was a bit like Raymond Hubbell in that he wrote thousands of songs and only one, The Sheik of Araby, has survived. Smith was no genius, but there is a period charm about some of his songs which echo an age long since vanished. In 1914, he collaborated with Jerome Kern in a show called The Laughing Husband. It turned out to be the first show where Kern ever enjoyed big sheet music sales. And the song that did it was this one.
We two are traveling in Loveland today. We've gone astray and lost our way. What matter time or place or weather, if we have lost our way together? You're here and I'm here, so what do we care? The time and place do not count, it's the one who is there. Now all I ask is room for two, and to be there with only you. It would be heaven when two two hearts are true hearts like yours and mine. The skies are fair everywhere and the sun seems to shine. And now the wide world seems a little cozy corner for you and me. There are just two on earth and no one beside. My little bride, here by my side. Naught of the busy world reminds us. I only hope that no one finds us. You're here and I'm here, so what do we care? The time and place do not count, it's the one who is there. Now all I ask is room for two, and to be there with only you. It would be heaven when two hearts are true hearts like yours and mine. The skies are fair everywhere and the sun seems to shine. And now the wide world seems a little cozy corner for you and me.
You're Here and I'm Here by Harry B. Smith and Jerome Kern. June the 3rd, 1931, is one of those days marked in a big red pencil in the history books, because on that day, arguably the greatest revue ever to open on Broadway had its first night. It was called The Bandwagon, but a more accurate title would have been The Bandwagons, because it was the first show ever to have a double revolving stage. The Astaires starred in it, and Arthur Schwartz and Howard Dietz wrote it. One of the less heralded songs in the score was this one.
I never kissed a man before. Oh, isn't that a shame? I never kissed a man before I knew his name. I never had a taste for wine. Oh, isn't that a sin? I never had a taste for wine, for wine can't compare with gin. It's nice, as nice can be. My faith is at last restored. Own reward. I always go to bed at 10. Oh, isn't that a bore? I always go to bed at 10. Then I go home at 4.
The words and music of Schwartz and Dietz. Now, the man capable of that lyric had to be a bit of a wisecracker, and it's true that Howard Dietz fathered some of the choicest remarks of the period. The one of his which I have special affection for is the time he took advantage one Friday of his position as vice president in charge of publicity at MGM to ask Greta Garbo out to dinner on the following Monday. Miss Garbo's reply was the ultimate put-down. Smiling sweetly, she said, "How do I know I'll be hungry next Monday?" Dietz then dropped the subject. Now, this team of Schwartz and Dietz raises the question of how far to trust writers who tell picturesque stories about their songs. The best one Schwartz and Dietz ever wrote, and one of the best anybody ever wrote, was the basis of Arthur's favourite anecdote about how he and Dietz decided to write a song that really meant something, not just about love, but a song that made a philosophical statement. So they looked along the spines of the books in Howard's study, and they found one called Dancers in the Dark. There was their song about the loneliness of being alive, like Dancers in the Dark. Well, that was Arthur's version. In his autobiography, Howard Dietz says only this, quote, "When we wrote Dancing in the Dark, I thought it was a good song, but dull. I debated whether or not we should put it in the show at all. There seemed to be no way of staging it. But time and applause have taken the dullness out of it," unquote. I think only a resolute non-musician could have written that.
Dancing in the dark till the tune ends. We're dancing in the dark and it soon ends. We're waltzing in the wonder of why we're here. Time hurries by, we're here and we're gone, looking for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, and we can face the music together, dancing in the dark. What though love is old, what though song is old, through them we can be young. Hear this heart of mine wailing all the time. Dear one, tell me that we're one. Looking for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, and we can face the music together. Dancing in the dark, dancing in the dark, dancing in the dark.
The words and music of Schwartz and Dietz. As some people have noticed, that every now and again I pass a remark that suggests that maybe I don't think that the men who ran the great Hollywood studios were altogether to be trusted to post a letter. Occasionally people write defending these great brains from my reservations about them. Once upon a time I wrote a radio series about the moguls for Orson Welles to read, and Orson read it saying that his only reservation was that I didn't think as much of the Mayers and Zanucks as I should, and that they were great men. Well, maybe, but I stick to my own impression, which accords with Harry Warren's, Ira Gershwin's, Cole Porter's and Richard Rodgers's, which was that the heads of the studios couldn't carry a tune in a suitcase. The evidence is irrefutable. As an example, the show Lady in the Dark by Ira Gershwin and Kurt Vile, not quite the greatest of scores, but there were two moments worth savouring. One was the quickfire comic song, Tchaikovsky. The other was the wonderful ballad, one of the most beautiful of the decade, My Ship. When they made the movie version, they left out both songs. Even gentle-spirited Ira makes angry noises in his autobiography. Then there was the odd case of the show 1776, a rather unusual and imaginative musical dealing with political issues in the days when the American colonists were about to break away from the mother country and go it alone. By far the most pertinent song was called Cool Conservative Men, a witty exposition of the case for staying put. When they made the movie, they left it out. Bad taste or political poltroonery, I wonder. Either way, the men responsible were a bunch of worms. On June the 7th, 1928, the songwriter Charles Strauss was born, and I wonder what he privately thinks about this issue. His show, Annie, wrongly dismissed as a marshmallow affair, had admittedly a score which was so derivative that each time the songs came up, I found myself singing an older one. But the thing was at least done with great wit. And there was one song in that show which, so far from being marshmallow, gave the biggest punch in the nose to a political reputation I can ever recall. They left it out of the picture. And whoever the donkey was who was responsible, I hope they burn his toast in the morning indefinitely. Here is what that jackass left out of the picture.
Today we're living in a shanty. Today we're scrounging for a meal. Today I'm stealing coal for fire.
Throw away the papers.
We don't anymore. We'd like to thank you, Herbert Hoover.
turkeys too. We got no turkey for our stuffing. Why don't we stop you? We'd like to thank you, Herbert.
Thank you, Herbert,
for really showing us the way. You're turning right, you. You're a friend, you. Made us what we are today. Come and get it, Herb.
That was the song that Hollywood, in its limited judgment, thought had no place in the moderate screen version. Negligence of a different kind attaches to the career of Robert Mesavy, born June 8, 1918, and one of the greatest musical comedy performers of the last 50 years. And yet he had to wait hundreds of films before they let him sing one note. When he did sing it, this is how it came out.
A pool table, don't you understand? Friend, either you're closing your eyes to a situation you do not wish to acknowledge, or you are not aware of the caliber of disaster indicated by the presence of a pool table in your community. Well, you got trouble, my friend. Right here, I say trouble right here in River City. Why, sure, I'm a billiard player. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spend with a cue in my hand are golden. Help you cultivate horse sense and a cool head and a keen eye. Did you ever take and try to find an ironclad lead for yourself from a three-rail billiard shot? But just as I say, it takes judgment, brains, and maturity to score in a balk-line game. I say that any boob can take and shove a ball in a pocket. And I call that sloth the first big step on the road to the depths of degrade. I say first, medicinal wine from a teaspoon, then beer from a bottle. And the next thing you know, your son is playing for money in a pinchback suit. And listening to some big out-of-town Jasper, hearing him tell about horse race gambling. Not a wholesome trotting race, no, but a race where they set down right on a horse. Like to see some stuck-up jockey boy setting on Dan Patch, make your blood boil, well, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pockets in a table. Pockets that mark the difference between a gentleman and a bum, with a capital B, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. And all week long, your River City youth will be frittering away. I say your young men will be frittering. Frittering away there, noontime, supper time, chore time too. Get the ball in the pocket. Never mind getting dandelions pulled or the screen door patched or the beach take pounded. Never mind pumping any water till your parents are caught with the cistern empty on a Saturday night, and that's trouble. Yes, you got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids in the Knickerbocker, shirt-tail young ones, peeking in the pool hall window after school. You got trouble. Folks right here in River City. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. Now I know all you folks are the right kind of parents. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know what kind of conversation goes on while they're loafing around that hall? They'll be trying out Bevo, trying out Cubabs, trying out TaylorMades like cigarette fiends, and bragging all about how they're going to cover up a telltale breath with Sen-Sen one fine night. They leave the pool hall, heading for the dance at the armory. Libertine men and scarlet women and ragtime. Shameless music that'll grab your son, your daughter, with the arms of a jungle, animal instinct, masteria. Friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble.
Oh, they got trouble.
Right here in River City.
Right here in River City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
That stands for pool.
We've surely got trouble.
We've surely got trouble.
Right here in River City.
Right here.
Gotta figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school.
Our children gonna have trouble.
Mothers of River City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he rebuckle his knickerbockers below the knee? Is there a nicotine stain on his index finger? A dime novel hidden in the corn crib? Is he starting to memorize jokes from Cap'n Billy's whiz-bang? Are certain words creeping into his conversation? Words like swell and so's your old man. What if so, my friends? You got trouble.
Oh, we got trouble.
Right here in River City.
Right here in River City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
That stands for pool.
We've surely got trouble.
We've surely got trouble.
Right here in River City.
Right here.
Remember the Maine, Plymouth Rock, and the Golden Rule.
Our children, children gonna have trouble.
Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15 numbered balls is a devil's tool.
Devil's tool.
Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. Oh, yes, we got trouble.
With a T. Gotta rhyme it with P.
Right,
and that stands for pool.
Robert Preston Mesavy as Harold Hill, the barnstorming music man in Meredith Willson's 1950s musical. One of the great musical performances, the American vernacular equivalent of Rex Harrison's talk song technique in My Fair Lady. After the Music Man, Preston naturally worked in other musicals, including an adaptation of an odd fish among hit plays, a two-hander called The Four Poster, Story of a Marriage. In the musical version, the two parts were played by Preston and Mary Martin, going through the stages of a life together. Now, in this scene, Preston has arrived at the point where he considers himself a very fine fellow indeed.
Women, you see, are different from men. They look marvelous when they're young, but then when a woman achieves her matron station, there begins a certain process of, well, deterioration. Now, just a minute, let me finish. It's a well-known fact that a man is more attractive the older that he grows. He's like a late October rose. He's noticed everywhere he goes. It's the strangest thing, but a man is more distinguished as time starts sliding by. Although I really don't know why, I couldn't change it if I tried. Unfortunate, maybe, but changeable, it's not. Men of 40 go to town, women go to pot. It's a well-known fact that a man is more attractive with each passing year. He gets more and more attractive, and the girls react. It's a well-known fact. When a man is under 21, he is not worth a damn. He thinks that he's a tiger, but he's really just a lamb. He growls, he roars, he wears his trousers tight, but he's like that no good hound of ours, all bark, no bite. When a man is under 31, he's like domestic beer. He has a certain body, but he doesn't have it here. He wheels, he deals, he doesn't spare expense, but he's like the national budget, all bills, no sense. But when a man is 41, he's entering his prime. Delightfully witty, still he's wise, for he stood the test of time. It's a well-known fact that a man is more attractive with each passing year. He gets more and more attractive, and the girls react. It's a well-known fact.
Robert Preston outraging the feminist lobby there in a song from the musical I Do, I Do. Now, how would a wife answer that outrageous statement? I suppose with an outrageous statement or two of her own.
That pompous, 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 pompous ass. Now's the time for that hat. The one I've been saving for all these years. An $85 hat. What do you think of that? 13 feathers of the pigeon family and a bird of paradise blue. I hid this hat for 4 whole years in this great big box at the foot of the bed, right here in this very same room. But now my spouse, it's out of the box, and I'm gonna tell you what. If I am going to go to this pot, is gonna be hot. Say, who's that racy middle-aged lady peeking underneath her veil? Why, don't you know? That's flaming Agnes, her husband up and left. Who's that pale, available matron underneath the peacock's tail? Why, can't you guess? That's flaming Agnes, emancipated lady used to find her sitting in the kitchen. Mousy housewife was her name. But the day her husband up and left her, Agnes started to flame. Now they say that nothing can save her, and they blame her husband for the blazing shame of flaming Agnes. Flirting with the fellas, tending to the kiddies up to here in cream of wheat. But the day her husband up and left her, that's the day that Agnes turned the heat on. Now she flames from night till early morning while he slaves to raise alimony he must pay to flaming Agnes.
Flaming Agnes from I Do, I Do, sung there by an outraged Mary Martin. We can't take our leave without saluting one of the best musicals never to reach the West End of London. Maybe because so many of its impresarios ought not to be let out without their nannies. Or is it ninnies? Anyway, here's a song from the show we still wait to see.
D.W. Griffith makes film epics of sweet and grandeur. Senate, hell, he just makes movies. Heartbreak and passion may both be in fashion, but I want to make the world laugh. Let others do drama of sin and disgrace, while I throw a fish in the heroine's face. To keep them in stitches, I'd burn the star's britches and saw Cousin Sally in half. Let Mr. Griffith deal with humanity's woes. I'd rather film the guy with a fly on his nose. My goal and my mission, my burning ambition is I want to make the world laugh. Some have a leaning for dark hidden meaning, but I want to make the world laugh. Let other directors film tragic romance, but I like a hero with ants in his pants. Nothing I've found is as sweet as that sound is, the music that fattens the calf. My great new plot is not about tyranny's lash. It deals with itching powder and Papa's mustache. This curse I've been blessed with, completely possessed with, is I wanna make the world.
Heartbreak and passion, they both be in fashion.
So keep the schmaltz and the suds and the sobs. The only art we know is to tickle the slobs. This curse we've been blessed with, completely possessed with, is we wanna make the world laugh.
I Wanna Make the World Laugh sings Robert Preston impersonating Mac Sennett in the musical Mac and Mabel. Now that's a very good show to end a programme with, because so many of the songs have a Try and Follow That One air about them. Now, one of Sennett's great sales pitches was his use of good-looking girls, and for Mac and Mabel, Jerry Herman wrote the perfect song to describe this facet of Sennett's art. Apparently, the stage at this moment is packed with pink pulchritude, even with some of the girls on swings and swooping out over the audience. And that was how Sennett punctuated his slapstick with the good old time-honoured formula of good-looking dames. So, here is my closer this afternoon.
I'll make a star and a half out of that one. The one with the dimples, the redhead, the fat one. How about the one on the blanket, the one playing ball? Let's take them both. Oh, to hell with it. Let's take them all.
gives a man ginger and snap, going through life with his little old lap full of hundreds and hundreds of girls. What gives a man power and punch? Tina for breakfast and Lena for lunch, having hundreds and hundreds of girls. Show him a blog and something in his soul will leap to respond. But then again, he's also terribly fond of this brunette, and so instead of one dandy dish, pass him the candy dish. I'll sprinkle spice into his life to make him forget that he's stuck with his wife. Give him hundreds and hundreds of girls. Beulah and Belle, Gladys and Gert, two for the entree and three for dessert. Give him hundreds and hundreds of girls. Four on a slide, five on a swing, I'm gonna make the cash register ring, having hundreds and hundreds of girls. I'll fill the screen with Jan and Jane and Joan and Janet and Jean. I'll pull the greatest stunt this business has seen, till every fella from Duluth to Atlanta sees all of his fantasies. Look!
Gives a man ginger and snap, going through life with his little lap full of hundreds and hundreds of girls. What gives a man power and punch? Tina for breakfast and Lena for lunch, having hundreds and hundreds of girls.
Analysts find this thing called modern man was never designed with only one eternal partner in mind. And so I gotta yell to hell with propriety, leave a variety, sinner or saint, schoolgirl or queen. One girl is boring and two are obscene. Give him hundreds and hundreds of girls.
Hundreds of Girls, Robert Preston, and the Broadway cast of Mac and Mabel. And that's it. See you same time next week.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.